21. Inside New Barcelona. Captain Montoriel raised her hands as if to say, "Look, look what I've created. Isn't it wondrous?" And Modo could only agree. Even Colette had turned to look back at him. Down in a valley, 12 white mineral towers rose from the ocean floor, each bubbling at the top and looking like an oversized chimney. Wrapped around the towers, like pearls tossed by Poseidon, were 20 or so dome-shaped bronze buildings of various sizes. It was the beginning of an underwater city. 2 people in aquasuits stood outside one dome, welding a section into place. How they were able to weld underwater, Modo had no idea. A 3rd aquasuited person was screwing large bolts into a steel plate. The entire set of buildings glittered and glowed with light and life. All this at the bottom of the ocean. They arrived at a stairwell cut out of the seafloor and descended slowly. Modo was so busy soaking up the sights of the city that he stumbled twice. Light glowed in round glass windows. Windmills, or rather watermills, turned on several of the roofs. The group passed a yellow and red flag on a pole, swishing back and forth in the current, fish darting around it. They stopped at a round door with a large spoked wheel. Serdar spun the wheel until the door opened, and they stepped into a large lock chamber. Once Serdar had closed the door behind them, Captain Montoriel lowered a lever on the other side of the chamber. Hissing and bubbling, the water was soon below Modo's viewing window, then his chest and his legs, and seconds later it had all drained away. The suit felt much heavier. His legs were rubbery and tired. Serdar removed his own aquahelm and helped the captain take off hers. Then they both helped Modo and Colette. Finally, Serdar lifted off Comrade Garay's helmet.
"That was wonderful," Garay said. "A marvel and a joy."
"I agree," Captain Montoriel said. "There is nothing like a good walk to clear your mind."
She turned to Colette with a mischievous look.
"And how is my oyster-minded friend?"
Serdar was grinning, too.
"Oh, je suis assommé," Colette answered.
She was astounded. Modo was pleased to put all his years of French classes to work.
"It's beyond belief," he said,
and Colette added, "Truly and utterly, I am speechless and stunned." The captain shrugged as if to say, "Of course," then spun a knob and the door into the interior opened. Waiting for them in a brightly lit room were 3 women in white robes. Modo blinked, then held a hand to shade his eyes. Montoriel clanked in, and they all followed, making a glorious racket.
"Welcome home, Captain Montoriel," a rosy-cheeked, middle-aged woman said.
Her 2 companions looked about the same age, their skin soft and pale. One reminded Modo of Mrs. Finchley, but this woman appeared happier and plumper. The women assisted them in taking off the aquasuits and hanging the various pieces on wall hooks. Soon Modo was stripped down to the india rubber. Without the weight of the suit, he felt as though he would float up to the ceiling. He snorted up as much of the cool, refreshing air as he could, realizing now just how hard it had been to breathe in the suit.
"I have work I must attend to," Serdar said. "Our recent need to patrol our waters has meant we have neglected some of the repairs our city demands."
"Yes, Serdar, I hear what you are saying," Captain Montoriel said, "and I agree. We shall patrol less and get to work on the plaza soon."
He nodded. "I look forward to that. Come along, Comrade Garay. We are on welding duty today."
Serdar bowed to the women and left the room, with Garay a step behind. Modo glanced around, soaking up every detail. The same glowing circular lights as on the Ictinio, except much larger. An arched roof, red curtains along a wall, paintings of the underwater world hanging on every open wall space. He eagerly took a glass of water offered by one of the women.
"It is purified sea water," Montoriel said, raising her glass. "A toast to my friends. Welcome to New Barcelona, the first and greatest city of Icaria."
Modo took a sip.
"It tastes marvelous."
The sound of running water drew Modo's attention, and he turned to see a waterfall set in a corner.
"That is purified seawater, too," Montoriel said. A skylight, or rather an ocean light, was set into the ceiling, and on the opposite wall was a large window. Both presented brilliant views of the ocean. A squid squirted by, and several schools of fish swam past.
"How is all this possible?"
Modo asked.
Montoriel laughed. "Anything we imagine is possible. That is what my father taught me."
"But how were you able to build it?"
Colette asked.
"Ah, she speaks,"
Montoriel chided, a twinkle in her eye.
"You have never remained so silent for so long."
Colette drained her glass.
"Hikaria has certainly surprised me. Now I must admit, the Ictinio is a wondrous machine, though it's not the first submarine ship. No one has ever lived beneath the ocean. It's a huge leap in technology. To even conceive of it, never mind making it a reality."
"Yes," the captain agreed. "Our collective imaginations and our collective will made it possible. There are systems from the Ictinio, for example our air supply and energy, writ large here. These are what allow us to breathe at 50 meters below sea level." She paused.
"Speaking of air..."
She went to the wall of dripping aquasuits to examine the gauge on Modo's.
"That's odd. You don't seem to consume any more oxygen than the rest of us. Perhaps it happens when you sleep."
"You could sleep in an aquasuit to find out," Colette suggested in her usual wry tone.
"Wouldn't that be comfortable?"
"I'd rather not, thank you," said Modo, and turned back to Montoriel. "How long have you been developing New Barcelona?"
7 years. Seda and I found this life-giving sector with the Philomena, a prototype to the Ictinio. I had been looking specifically for hydrothermal energy. Everything is constructed on a plateau. The valleys on either side would be too deep for us to conquer at this point in time."
She gestured at the white rocks towering above them, clearly visible through the ocean-light cupola.
"These natural chimneys are hydrothermal vents, some as tall as the tallest buildings in New York. They vent water at 200 degrees Celsius, which we use to heat our living capsules. For a hot bath, all you have to do is turn a tap."
"That is the height of civilization," Colette said enviously. "The showers on the Ictinio are ice cold. It keeps the comrades awake. Here, though, our food floats by and we catch it with nets, not ever having to leave the comfort of our homes."
Montoriel paused.
"Anything is possible, my friends, with human comradeship. This is just the first of many cities to come."
"But how do you create oxygen?"
Modo asked.
"We use the same process as with the tanks that got you here, though on a much larger scale."
"How many live here?" Colette asked.
"We could easily support 500, starting today, and we would have no problem finding citizens, given that our arms are open to the rejected and the oppressed."
She led them into a room that smelled of bread. A man and a woman who wore white robes with yellow and red stripes were hard at work, kneading dough. The woman offered a baked sample to Modo and Colette. Modo took a piece, spread it with a dark, lumpy paste, and devoured it.
"This bread is exactly what I needed," he exclaimed, having enjoyed every mouthful.
"Oh, that is not exactly bread, Mr. Walken. It is made from ground coral and mermaid's purse. That's the pouch that holds shark eggs. Oh, and ground whalebone. The butter is black lumpfish caviar."
"Caviar?" Colette asked.
"Isn't that rather expensive?" "Here, it's free. I get particular pleasure from eating something for which the rich pay exorbitantly."
Modo couldn't believe that something that sounded so strange could taste so good. He greedily accepted a second piece. When Modo had eaten, Montoriel took them down an arched hall and up a wide staircase that had been cut into the bedrock. Beautiful fossil shapes had been carved into each step. Montoriel then led them into a large room. Modo looked around to see that they were, in fact, inside a great dome.
"Welcome to Ikaria's National Museum," chimed Montoriel,
obviously pleased with herself. Ship models hung from the ceiling. A model of a submarine made of wood sat on a platform.
"That is what the Adelaida looked like.
Montoriel said. It was my father's first submarine ship, and it held only 4 people. You had to pedal hard just to get out of the docks. She laughed. Oh, the hours I spent pedaling. We would picnic at the bottom of the reef, away from the city and all its politics. My father hated the clay curmudgeons of bureaucracy.
Sadness crossed her face.
It was named after my older sister, who died of consumption. That was a long time ago.
Modo searched for words to comfort her, but Montoriel had already moved on, her face no longer showing any sign of emotion. He glanced away and looked through the portholes on each side of the museum. They gave an impressive view of the rest of New Barcelona. Noticing his gaze, Montoriel said, "This is the highest point of the city." Modo peered up at the giant ocean light in the ceiling. He couldn't tell if the sun was shining. Somewhere out there was the real world. "In Xanadu did Kublai Khan a stately pleasure dome decree," he quoted, "where Alf, the sacred river, ran through caverns measureless to man, down to a sunless sea." Montoriel and Colette clapped.
"Ah, Coleridge," Montoriel said. "All of his works are in our library."
Modo tapped his temple.
"I keep it up here. It's as if Icaria has brought his poem to life."
He could see the pride in her eyes. Deservedly so.
"I'll admit an English monkey can occasionally write a good poem," Colette said, her eyes piercing his. "But in the end it is still written in English. I shall have to read you a French poem. It's such a language of romance."
She reached up to touch a large, bell-shaped object made of wood and strengthened by metal braces. Weights hung on hooks around the circumference to make the bell sink deep into water. Its interior was made waterproof by India rubber.
"That's a diving bell," Colette said. "I've seen the Marines use these."
"You have?" the captain asked.
"Where?"
"With my father. We were traveling with Ambassador Vernier, and we were escorted to Morocco by Marines. They used the bell to reclaim the guns from a ship that had sunk. The bell is weighted so it sinks bottom first and traps air inside. Then divers swim down to the bell and use it as an oxygen station so they can dive even deeper."
"Yes, a primitive but effective way of travelling underwater."
"This diving bell was used off the coast of the Cap de Creus, near my childhood home. Come along." As they walked out of the museum, Modo asked,
"Why are you showing us all this?"
"Because I want you to understand the destiny of Icaria. This is the future of mankind. Rather than fighting over the refuse above us, we'll work as one in the womb of Mother Earth. Each of us equal. All of us one. The complete emancipation of men, of women, of the strong and the crippled."
Modo couldn't help feeling the same desire for such a utopia. Montoriel pointed out a porthole.
"I don't know if you saw the people welding and working outside the city. Some are elderly, but in the water they shed their years. Some have lost limbs, but with the support of the ocean they can work."
She paused.
"We'll also have historical and archaeological museums about the old world above us. Collections of the greatest works of art that mankind has created. The drawings of Da Vinci. The formulas of Galileo. It will all be safe here forever."
She pointed to the statue of a naked goddess with her arms lifted to the sun.
"Diana, discovered in the wreck of a trireme. How could they possibly afford to build such a city? The sheer volume of metalwork alone was staggering to Modo. Smaller nations couldn't finance it. How could so few people find the resources?" It became clear in an instant.
"You paid for the construction with undersea treasure, taken from wrecks."
"Yes, Mr. Walken," Captain Montoriel said, nodding. "You have come to the right conclusion. Think of all the warships mankind has put to sea over the centuries, triremes and quinquiremes carrying gold for Caesar, the great Spanish Armada, British frigates off Cape Trafalgar. I have walked among the wrecks and carried back the old world's treasures to build this new world."
"So thieves do prosper," Colette said. Modo expected Montoriel to snap at her.
but the captain only smiled. You cannot steal from the dead. Your world covets gold, not mine. I have been to your Paris, the air blackened by belching coal, the starving children begging for food. New York, London, ugly ground-dweller cities with their Babel towers. My mother lives in that ugly city of Paris.
Colette's voice was breaking.
I have people I care about, too, Modo said, but it felt as though a year had passed since he had last thought of Octavia. My wife, Octavia, and my father. And I have my photograph collection in London. I'm not a famous artist, but it's my life. Well, it is gone, vanished.
Montoriel waved her hand as though the flick of fingers could erase their memories.
You must leave the past behind. Icaria is your new world. This is why I'm showing off our beautiful city. You will come to love it here.
I can't forget my wife,
Modo said, surprised by the depth of his own anger. It wasn't just Octavia he was being asked to abandon. Mr. Socrates, Tharper, Mrs. Finchley.
Captain Montoriel, my whole world is out there.
A dead world,
she responded nonchalantly.
I understand the loss of loved ones. Do you think I walked away from Catalonia without second thoughts? But it must be done, a clean cut.
Catalonia. So that was where she was from. A province of Spain, once its own country.
Sometimes it's the cleanest cut that kills, Colette said, because you don't notice you've been wounded.
Montoriel raised her index finger.
Or it severs the limb from the trap. We have room for you both here. We have photographic equipment, Mr. Walken. Imagine the blue whale, its image taken from the ocean floor. It would be a first. But my wife, she would not deny you this opportunity if she knew. And Mademoiselle Brunette, you must also live as though you had no previous life. That is what all of us surrender. You will not be allowed to return to the old world to tell them about our creation.
So you are imprisoning us for life? Said Colette.
You can't do that, Modo said, shaking his finger at her.
Montoriel laughed.
This is not a prison. This is utopia.
She glanced at a clock on the wall.
As always, the visits are too short. We should return to the Actinio. New Barcelona needs to be resupplied, and we must defend our borders.
As Montoriel led them down a long hall, Colette pulled on Modo's sleeve. He slowed his pace so that they were several feet behind the captain. Colette leaned in to Modo and whispered,
I'll pull out the tubes on her air tank halfway back. No one will keep me a prisoner forever.
You can't do that,
he replied.
The Icarians would kill us both.
You're right, but there will be a time to escape.
Then she paused.
Together, she added.
When they returned to the lock chamber, Montoriel helped them into their aquasuits.
Where's Serda?
Modo asked.
He has duties here. I shall send for him when I need him.
You can communicate with New Barcelona from the Actinio.
How? I send a message in a frequency the dolphins understand, and they deliver it by Morse code, tapping on the glass.
Really?
Modo asked. Montoriel laughed.
No, my friend. I was being amusing. My father had quite a sense of humour. I inherited some of it.
Some is right.
Colette wore a grim little smile.
To answer your question, Montoriel said as they clomped into the lock chamber, we communicate between the city and the Actinia with sonic messages. It's similar to an underwater speaking trumpet.
But how would Serdar join you? Said Modo.
Ah, you ask too many questions, Modo. I suggest you put on your helmet.
Montoriel stood at a bank of levers and began flipping them up, then slipped on her helmet. Modo did too, hoping he had fastened the clasps correctly. Soon he was following Captain Montoriel across the plateau toward the Ictinio. Dolphins played around them, and he wondered at it all.
a world where he might actually be accepted for who and what he was, if the captain was to be believed, where he wouldn't have to change from face to face, shape to shape. No more fighting, no more assignments. A world of peace. If only Octavia could be here. The thought of her gave him a pang of guilt, for he'd been thinking more often of Colette. Could Octavia be so easily forgotten? Could the rest of the world be left behind? If he was to be trapped under the ocean, Colette was beautiful and interesting, perhaps even enough to spend a lifetime with. But what about Mr. Socrates and Tharpa? What would life be like without them? And what would Mr. Socrates think of New Barcelona? Modo desperately wanted to tell him about it. He pictured Mr. Socrates saying, "You've done well, Modo." He wheezed, his throat a little tight. He coughed and felt a prickling at the back of his neck. Oh, no. He was changing. He tried to slow the process. His bones were shifting, and his flesh was pressing against the armor. He was breathing so rapidly he feared he would pass out. Finally, he spotted the Actinio and lumbered as quickly as possible toward it, pushing seaweed out of his way. The others, recognizing that something was wrong, caught up to him and climbed into the lock chamber after him. Soon the water drained out of the lock chamber and the door opened. Modo threw himself onto the floor, choking for air.